And good afternoon. Welcome into Market Talk for Friday, April 16th, 2021. Great to have you here with us as we wrap up another week. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Find us online, markettalkag.com. You can find us there, all of our social media links, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of our streaming sources, our YouTube channel, our radio affiliates, everything, one-stop shop. It's all online, markettalkag.com. Happy to bring on our good friend here this Friday afternoon, Mike Pearson, joining us for this episode of Market Talk. And Mike, good afternoon. It's great to catch up with you, my friend.
Good to hear from you too, Jesse. Things are moving. I tell you what, it's an exciting time to be in agriculture.
It is a very exciting time to be in agriculture. Not only are things moving on the commodity markets, but things are moving in the fields as well. I mean, just look at where you're at. I've been hearing reports all across the country, a lot of folks getting into the fields here early and getting some planting done for spring 2021.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of the same, but I will tell you, Jesse, I was talking with a couple growers this past week, a few in South Dakota and a few in North Central Iowa, and across the board, they all said this cold snap that we're getting started last weekend and kind of has stretched through this week. All the guys I spoke with said that was slowing down their planting intentions. They were going to wait and see for this thing to pass by. Most of them had other work they could work on as well, and they figured, why slam seeds in if it's going to warm up here in 5 or 6 days? We'll just put a pause on. So I'm not expecting a lot of huge shifts to the upside in Monday's crop progress report. But yeah, I mean, as you saw here on this last one, 1% Iowa corn's already in the ground. We'll find out on Monday how beans are looking. But yeah, growers are running. You get down to Texas and oh, buddy, they are running hard down there and across southern Missouri and southern Indiana and Illinois, of course, Kentucky, all those places. Those growers are rocking and rolling.
They are. And you think about it, you know, we look at the USDA reports that have come out here the last couple of weeks, and the lower acreage numbers for quarter beans really sent a shockwave into this market. And we look at how tight our margins are here in the U.S. We really need to produce a strong crop this year in order to keep our supplies up, especially on the soybean side. And there's a lot of factors going into the market trade right now, and you alluded to weather, and I think that's a good place for us to start. And there's a lot of different weather concerns playing in the market, not only here in the U.S. with drought in the northern plains, but up into Canada as well with the drought there in the prairies, and even South America, Brazil, Safrina corn crop, drought issues there, or weather issues there, I should say. When you look at all these weather factors and how that's playing into the market, what are you hearing from folks, as to how much the weather is really driving these markets right now?
So it is, it's a factor, it certainly is. When I'm talking to analysts and brokers right now, everybody's getting geared up for this summer. And as of right now, Jesse, you, and I'm sure all your viewers and listeners know as well, we don't know what's coming, right? We're starting to get some of these longer range forecasts that can help shed some light on it. But the way the system is set up right now with this really persistent and severe drought that stretches, you look at the drought monitor, it's effectively a massive fat sea that stretches from Texas all the way across the southwestern United States. You talk to cattle ranchers in New Mexico and in Arizona and parts of Colorado, it is bone dry. I mean, their pasture conditions are really looking tough. Folks are making decisions on whether or not to sell pears. And this drought stretches then all the way through California. Was talking to Chad Colby, who's our technology expert on This Week in Agribusiness. He's out in California this week. And as of now, a full one quarter of all California's crop acres aren't going to receive their full water allotment this year. That much we know for sure. And it's probably only going to tighten down unless some significant weather systems move into California. And this time of year, that's just not super likely. That drought then stretches through the Pacific Northwest and then across the High Plains. And as you mentioned, up into Canada, North Dakota, the entire state is abnormally dry or worse, with a majority of it now in some of the worst stages of drought on the drought monitor. Again, was talking to some folks on Twitter, North Dakota growers, cow-calf producers out in the western part of the state. They're making that decision. Do we cull pears right now as a way to free up some competition for this grass, reduce competition for this grass out in that part of the state, in that part of the world, rather. And this is impacting not just cow-calf producers. This is impacting anybody who's going to be planting a crop out there. In particular, Jesse, I'm sure you've been talking about it with a lot of your guests. This spring wheat crop, Minneapolis wheat, is interesting. every acre of Minneapolis wheat effectively this year is going to be planted in a drought scenario, and we're looking at fewer acres to begin with. So there could be a lot of excitement as this summer rolls through if the drought should intensify. Now, that being said, we do have a fairly large storm system working its way through the center of the United States right now. I know parts of western Kansas are getting some snow here on this Friday. Western Nebraska got some snow, definitely needed in those places. But I believe the system's going to break down before it moves too much farther east. So subsoil moisture is a concern. The trade's not watching it too closely as of yet. But whoo, when the focus does turn to weather, Jesse, things could get exciting.
Very, very true. And, you know, staying on that spring wheat crop here a little bit and wheat in general, all three wheat, Chicago, KC, Minneapolis, you look at the drought conditions in the northern plains. We look at the cold weather possibilities for that winter wheat crop. And, you know, looking at the trade today, seems like traders taking a few profits here, which, you know, especially in that Minneapolis wheat side, you know, we've run this price up quite a bit with the drought concerns. So, you know, it almost seems like we were bound to have a little consolidation here at some point. And it looks that way as we wrap up the week.
It does. It does. It looks that way in spring wheat. Certainly would appear to be the case as we look at the corn market. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. We're in rarefied air right now, pretty well across the board with cattle. Let me think. Kind of is the only exception. Everything else, we're seeing just a massive flux of money into the commodity space. It's being driven, I think, in a large part by fundamentals. You know, we've been talking about the demand for corn and soybeans. We've been talking about the Chinese demand for protein. All of these things have put incredible demand stress on an industry, particularly the logistics side of the industry, that is still struggling with COVID. So even though we've got a ton of international demand, it is still kind of a struggle to get everything loaded, perhaps less of a trouble in the United States than it is down in Brazil, or will be as coronavirus continues to spread down there. But as we get up to these levels, when we're talking price levels we haven't seen since the drought-induced price spike of the early 2010s, we're going to find people looking for reasons to back out, take their profits, and get a better read on what's going on. I do anticipate for folks, we're probably going to see fairly, I don't want to say stable pricing, because it's going to be volatile. This volatility that we're seeing is going to impact every market. We're seeing it in equities. We're seeing it in crude oil. We're seeing it in lumber. We're seeing it in corn, seeing it in soybeans, seeing it in lean hogs. Again, not really in cattle, but it's coming everywhere else. And this is driven by the true story, the fundamentals that exist out there in the world right now. But I believe we've also got a little bit of nitrous gas added to these markets right now in terms of monetary policy and fiscal policy. We have printed a pile of dollar bills and a pile of euros and a pile of Chinese currency and a pile of Brazilian reais. And we've printed all of this money globally over the past year. And that money's got to find a place. And it's increasingly finding its place in asset ownership, which agriculture, yeah, that means the futures. And I don't think we're seeing a whole lot of retail level investors. You know, your crazy aunt isn't putting her $1,400 stimulus check into Dee's corn, but it's freeing up a lot of excess capital from the larger players who are now free to exploit markets that are moving more quickly. And that's where the commodities influx is coming from in my mind, Jesse. And I think that's going to cause us to see lots of volatility, but not huge price swings, or I should say, no real changes in trend until we get through planting. I think we're going to find some stability up at these levels. I think as we're taking a look at the corn market, that $5.50 to $6 level for old crop seems to be realistic. I know May hit six, and I know that was exciting this past week. I'm not sure that the fundamentals justify a six handle on corn quite yet. But if this drought persists, or if it gets real rainy and corn's not going in on time, we'll definitely see corn move back to have a six in front of it. But in the meantime, I think we're going to be relatively stable in here going forward until we get a better handle on how many acres are going in the ground.
Yeah. Well, and another thing too, watching that Brazilian crop to see if there's any problems in the Safrina crop, second crop corn there, that could play in as well. And, you know, looking at this corn market, multi-year highs Thursday, we kind of pulled back a little bit today. But overall, corn market is staying fairly strong here as we wrap up the week. And, you know, you talk to a lot of producers, whether it's corn, soybeans, wheat, whatever the case is. You know, you mentioned that a lot of folks probably finding some profit here. If they haven't yet, I would just think they're crazy at this point. you know, we always hear the adage of, you know, sometimes a farmer is like, oh, well, it hit 550. I'm going to see if it goes to six, that kind of thing. When you're talking to producers right now, what are you hearing from them? Are they kind of showing their hand? Are they saying, yeah, you know, I finally moved some old crop corn to got out, or hey, I made some new crop sales or for corn or beans or whatever. What are you hearing when you talk to producers right now?
You know, Jesse, that's a great question. And I've been asking that question to nearly every producer that I've talked with, because this is a different year. This is unique. And the most common response I hear from producers is, I sold out old crop beans way too quickly at the start of this rally last year, and I unloaded corn a little too quickly. Most of the folks I've talked to were pretty well depleting their old crop corn on farm storage by February. That was kind of, and this is all anecdotal, but these are just the guys I have talked to. That's what they mentioned. They were scaling up sales as the market rallied. By the time we got to Feb, we were out of old stuff to sell. And these particular growers hadn't re-owned in any way. So they're out of the market on old crop. That stings. It and this has been researched a lot. It hurts a lot more when you did own something that is now worth a lot more than if you didn't own anything at all. Right. The idea of a lost profit is much harder for people to bear psychologically than just losing money. Everybody else lost money. You know, that's just the way of the world. But neighbor Bill's selling $6 May corn. I sold out at 408. Now I'm frustrated and I'm upset. That's the psychological hurdle that growers are negotiating on this new crop, because really we are a tinderbox right now in all the ag markets, but particularly corn and soybeans, where we're seeing these demand drivers be the strongest. You know, beans, old crop beans at $15. Is that a great deal? Or is that a great price for most growers? Yeah, that's profitable. They can definitely make the sale. But those same growers, Jesse, are a lot more profitable at $18 beans, right? And how do you manage it? And right now, I have not found anybody who has been thrilled with their marketing plan heading into this new crop. Everybody has, you know, coulda, woulda, shouldas with this crop, with their marketing so far. But I do think that the guys who are going to be successful as we roll through the end of this 2021 calendar year, the guys that are successful are the guys who are settling for, I don't want to call them base hits. I mean, these are doubles and triples we're hitting here at these price levels. But they're not necessarily home runs. And I think folks just have to make peace with the fact that we're going to be selling into an uncertain market. I do think there's still opportunity if folks are looking to re-own on the board, but that opportunity is dwindling. You know, as you know, the value of calls and puts of options on the futures market have been skyrocketing. Folks, the price of those tools climb along with volatility. So when we're in a really volatile environment, when prices are moving quickly, we see options values increase substantially. And that's certainly what happened. So before I advise anybody to look at re-ownership, I always say work with your broker and make sure your broker knows really what your break even is, so you can understand how you want to work these things into your marketing plan. I do think this is the year to do it, at least take a flyer on a couple of calls on some of the new crop corn and soybeans and probably wheat that you're getting sold. But remember, options that aren't managed tend to expire worthless. So if you're willing to take on options and if you're willing to re-own, I think you're probably going to see some payback this year. Odds are pretty good that we're going to get some kind of a weather scare, just given the drought scenario that we've got shaping up across the country. But don't plan on getting rich with them, Jesse, I think would be my advice.
And that's great advice. I love how you summarized that, Mike. And you know, looking at things too, as much as it does sting when you lose profit, still looking at, you know, four some dollar corn sales that were made or even close to five, or you're looking at new crop sales here close to five, we got to remember that's still better than last year.
Oh, it's better than every year going back to 2015, maybe 2016 for nearly every grower. Jesse, this is the time for farmers to make money. We all know we are in a commodity business. If we're producing stuff that we're going to sell on the Chicago Board of Trade, we're growing commodities. We're not differentiating our product in any specific way. We are selling commodities. And in the commodity cycle, Dr. Chad Hart at Iowa State University told this to me, oh, geez, it's probably been 15 years ago now, and it has stuck in my head. Jesse, over a long enough time frame, do you know what the average profitability is for a commodity producer? I didn't know this.
I would hate to take a guess. So why don't you educate me, Mike?
It's zero. Over a long enough time frame, the world of commodity production is such that price always responds to meet supply and demand eventually. So what that tells us is if our profit is historically zero, how in the world are these farms around for five, six, seven generations? It's because when they capture those inefficiencies when the market provides it. And right now we are in that period where the market is affording substantial profit to producers who are willing to make that sale. Now, the corollary to on average, everybody's worth zero means we're going to have massive profitability for right now. In the future, we are going to have losses to counteract that profitability. So I do think folks need to be aggressive. I do think we just have to swallow the fact that you're not going to hit the high this year. If you hit the high this year on making some sales, guys, it was luck. Nobody knows where this thing is going to top out. I don't care who you are, the smartest person in the world. Nobody knows where this thing's going to top out, especially in a market that's as weird and as volatile as the one we're in. If you had, in January 2020, before COVID, before all the stimulus, if you had pulled a true stock market expert out and you said, hey, in 18 months or 14 months, GameStop is going to be worth $450. They would have punched you in the face because GameStop was worth $3 at the time. These are weird times in the markets, and weird times mean volatility, and weird times means it's really difficult to predict where things are going. So bite the bullet, figure, hey, I'm not going to sell the high, but I want to sell in here at elevated prices, bring some of this profit back to my farm. This is the year to do it. Get those sales on the books. Don't be terribly aggressive at the start of this year. But if this dryness starts to spread, Jesse, I really want to see guys be aggressive on 2021, on 2022, particularly corn and soybean sales. And I would really start crunching numbers on your 2023 corn and soybean crop as well. Because the other thing we know about commodity production, prices are going to rally. What's going to happen to all of our input costs? They're going to climb right up with it. And we know that when those commodity prices turn down, they're going to turn down fast, while input prices are going to come down much more slowly. So let's lock in these high prices for as long as we can, Jesse.
Mike, I'll switch our topic to livestock here real quick. And I know you're a cattle guy. I want to give us enough time for cattle. Briefly on the hogs, we started to see some weakness come in here, some corrections. We were limit down Thursday. We're down again here on Friday. Do you think we put a top in this hog market, real briefly?
That's a great question, Jesse. And I'm going to ask that question of Naomi Bloom and Dan Huber here in just about 20 minutes. I don't have a good answer. I do think we have hit a medium-term top for sure. I think we are going to have to wait and see what comes out of China. They announced earlier today that their pig crop was 32% ahead of where their pig crop was first quarter 2020. So the world thinks they're getting their hog industry back. Time will tell. If they're not, if they're lying, which the Chinese government does, then we could certainly see this thing move higher into the summer months as their demand continues to accelerate.
All right, let's switch our topic to cattle. I know you're a cattle guy and you alluded to it as well. This cattle market has been tough to watch here. Now, we started to kind of break out. We started to get higher cash prices, and now all of a sudden we're kind of faltering here as we get into this week, and it's been pretty disappointing to watch. What are your thoughts on this cattle market, Mike?
It's very disappointing to watch. It's really frustrating to have cash cattle sit at 114 for three, 4 weeks for a lot of guys while the futures market is rallying, and then to finally have cash break and start to move up and start trading at 117, 118, 120, 121. I think the highest sale I've heard is 122, looking at last week. And now we've got the futures breaking hard. Now, a conspiracy theorist might say, well, packers are coming in, they're selling the board hard, and they're driving the futures price down. I don't know. But I do think we are going to have to wait until this summer. The good news for cattle producers, in my mind, as we look out to the future, is we do have some kind of inflationary event going on. We've got consumers with more money. Once those consumers are free to go to restaurants and they're free to spend $60 on a steak, Jesse, I think this is going to come back to benefit the cattle industry long term. I'm not terribly excited about locking in prices here over the summer on cattle. We just haven't had a strong basis opportunity. It hasn't really made sense to do it. But I am aware that waiting is risky. And what we're waiting, we're betting on the come in the cattle market, which is kind of how we roll. And we're betting that people are going to move out, start grilling, you know, start traveling more, vacationing, eating more. And all of that's going to create a compelling story in the beef market. Time will tell. But that's where my bias is right now today.
Well, always great insight, Mike. I appreciate the time as always. I know folks can see on This Week in Agribusiness alongside Max Armstrong.
And you bet.
Also, give a plug. I know you got the new show on Fridays with Feedstuffs.com, even though technically competition to me, but I want you to give a plug anyway.
You know, at the end of the day, Jesse, we're all trying to help growers make more money. Because yes, if farmers are making money, then they pay us and we make money. It's a win-win-win. So yeah, check out Feedstuffs.com Friday afternoon at 2 p.m. I do a roundtable discussion show with analysts, and it's 30 minutes long, and it's like talking to Jesse. It's just us sharing our thoughts and let you get behind the scenes at what brokers are thinking. So it's feedstuffs.com Fridays at 2 p.m. It's called The Locker Room. Thanks, Jesse.
Yeah, you bet, Mike. You can check out Market Talk and then flip over and check out The Locker Room on feedstuffs.com. Mike, darn, I appreciate catching up with you as always. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.
Likewise, Jesse. Take care.
Again, that's Mike Pearson joining us, host of This Week in Agribusiness, and of course his Friday show on feedstuffs.com called The Locker Room. We appreciate Mike joining us for his commentary here this afternoon. Also here on the show today, we're catching up with Kurt Blades with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, recapping the March equipment sales report. Here's that interview. Jesse Allen here. We're catching up with Kurt Blades, Senior VP of Ag Services with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Kurt, great to have you on today. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on. Look forward to talking.
Well, let's dive in, Kurt. Let's talk about the March farm tractor sales report release you guys put out. And you guys do this every month, looking at the U.S. and Canada and showing broad growth with the March report. Why don't we just dive in? Can you give us some of the highlights from the March report?
Absolutely. Well, as you said, the Association of Equipment Manufacturers every month produces the tractor and combine report for North America. So we do a U.S. and Canada, and we break that up by class. We also include combines. And for the last year, frankly, has been, you know, starting with April of last year, it's been a pretty solid story across the board. But the March numbers really show some nice growth. And I think why it's significant to talk about the March numbers is you think back a year ago, we were in a completely different spot. That was when the world kind of shut down. So to see the month over month growth is obviously something, but what's probably more impressive is the year to date growth that we've seen kind of across the board. So I'll just dive into those just a little bit, if you don't mind. You know, for example, small horsepower tractors, under 40 horsepower tractors, have been a solid story for the last 12 months. To date right now, we're 64% above where we were this time last year with small tractors, under 40 horsepower tractors. To put that in perspective, that's about 20,000 more units have been sold in 21 than there were in 22 in that under 40 horsepower class. That's amazing. Now, as you know, you got a lot of farmers that are listening to this, but you probably have a lot of folks that are not farmers. Those small horsepower tractors go to a lot of acreages. Those go to a lot of different folks. So, you know, that's part of the ag story, but really that's a bigger story. But what we want to talk about, what's really interesting, is that we've seen some really nice growth across all segments. So we look at the 40 to 100 horsepower tractors. We've seen about a 30% growth year to date. And in 100 plus horsepower tractors, so those row crop tractors, we've seen about an 18% growth year to date. That's culminating to about a 50% unit growth in all two-wheel drive classes just so far this year. Those are numbers we're all pretty happy about. A lot of factors that drive into that, but you know, we're pretty happy with the growth that we've seen so far.
Now, looking at that growth, especially here in the U.S., what do we attest that growth to? Is it maybe some of the stimulus money that's coming into farms and ranches out there, or what are you thinking is driving some of this growth, Kurt?
Well, what's driving the big percentage, as I mentioned, is that under 40 horsepower tractors. What's driving that more than anything else? Is, you know, there's some stimulus money that's going to non-farmers. That's kind of a consumer audience. And you can also look at other areas of the economy that have done particularly well. Luxury cars have gone particularly well. Anything that has to do with improving your home, home values, those types of things have done particularly well. So small tractors kind of fall into that same category of people that maybe have a little bit of disposable income. that may have not taken that trip to Europe and instead are buying a small tractor to work on their acreage. So that's driving those numbers. But the overall numbers, the ag numbers, I mean, we've enjoyed some really nice commodity prices over the last few months. We've got some, I mean, there's always going to be uncertainty about trade, but there is at least, we've seen some record trade numbers and some really solid trade numbers over the last few months, and even pointing to some of those markets that are looking pretty nice. We see a lot of conversations around biofuels, and we know the biofuels drive a whole lot of the commodity prices. So there is a little more optimism in farm country than there was a year ago right now, because some of those uncertainties that always plague the farm market seem to be having at least a little bit of some of that dark cloud is getting a little bit more clear. So that's driving the farmers to feel a little bit good about their operations and maybe taking a look at their capital investments and making an investment of some new equipment over the next couple of years.
And that's a great point that you make. We definitely have seen commodity prices rise and giving us a lot of room for increased profits here, which is something that farmers haven't seen in a few years now. So it's definitely a nice thing to see. Let's talk about our friends up north in Canada. I know you guys put out those numbers as well, and it looked like those numbers were positive across the board also. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, they have been. And I'll tell you, to put it in perspective, Canada's been a little bit soft for the last 3 years on tractor and combine sales. But we started to see in June, we started to see some improvements in that market. And it's really, really happy to see that, especially Western Canada. I know Western Canada farmers have really been under a lot of pressure. But if you look year to date, again, like in the U.S., the small tractor market is where the story lies. But there's also some really solid numbers in those other classes. In fact, we're seeing about a 20% jump in 100 plus horsepower tractors in Canada. Another interesting story in Canada is articulated four-wheel drive. So those big tractors, we're seeing a pretty sizable jump in those tractors as well, about a 50% jump year to date in that. Now, granted, we're not talking about a ton of numbers here. I mean, we're talking about tractors in the hundreds, but it's still, I mean, that's a considered purchase. If you want to buy a combine, if you want to buy an articulated four-wheel drive, you got to feel pretty good about the future of your operation. So it's really refreshing to see those numbers show some positive light pretty much across the board in Canada as well.
Well, Kurt, I know that the association shared a survey earlier this year, and it seems there's a lot of optimism out there in farm country. When we're looking ahead here through 2021, what are some of the things that AEM is seeing that we can look at as we go through the next couple of months that we think might be on the horizon when it comes to sales?
Well, the thing that I get most excited about when I talk to my members and when, you know, hopefully when I'm able to see them in person at trade shows and see some of the new technology, is just that. The new technology that's coming out there, certainly on the harvesting front, but on the planting front, and even on the row crop tractor front, there are some pretty amazing bits of technology that are really entering into the market that truly will make a difference in a farming operation, whether that is allowing them to drive a little bit longer because it, you know, reduce fatigue and auto steer, or whether it's because the combine, adjusts on the fly and allows them to go a little bit faster through the field without any harvest loss. Those are great things. So I love that. That gives me a whole lot of optimism when it comes to the sales, because I think the technology is a pretty fun way to see new sales. Obviously, we love it when the farm economy is great and there's replacement that a farmer wants to replace their equipment and take advantage of some of this. But I get really excited when a farmer is adopting these new technologies, because some of these can be business changes. And when you couple that with sort of this ongoing dialogue that is very exciting in our industry about a focus on the food chain, a focus on farmers being part of the environmental solutions, that's really exciting, because a lot of these new technologies also have a positive environmental benefit, have a positive story to say. And when a farmer adopts the technology because it makes economic sense for them, but the added benefit is it's got some environmental footprint benefit that we can tell the regulators and legislators that we're doing our job, that's a really neat story. And that gives me a lot of optimism for where this industry is going to be going for the next few years.
Well, Kurt, I appreciate you giving us some of the insight on the March report. Any other final thoughts you have for us today?
No, I'll tell you what, I do have one, is that we are entering the planting season. And I just encourage all of your listeners, if they're driving tractors down the road, I got a lot of personal experience in this. Just be careful. Be careful of everyone else that's around you. Have a plan for driving those tractors and planters down the road. Make sure that you know, you're using your flashers and pay particularly close attention when you turn left. So we want you to be safe out there, because we want you to be around for years and years to come.
And I also will add to that, the folks that are driving their cars and trucks, don't be in a hurry. I think that's another good
thing. Don't be in a hurry. Farmers want to, they want you to get around them as much as you want to get around them, but just trust us. Be a little bit patient while driving down the road. So thank
Definitely.
You for that, Jesse.
That's a good note to end on. Kurt Blades with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, thanks for joining me today. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks so much.
And again, that's Kurt Blades with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Thank you for tuning in to Market Talk today with our guests Kurt Blades and Mike Pearson joining us earlier for our market commentary. Find us online, markettalkag.com. This has been the Friday, April 16th edition of Market Talk. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great afternoon.